from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Locked On Chiefs, and it is Thursday. We have a really, really fun show for you today. We are going to talk with Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride, as we normally do on Thursdays. We're going to get to that here in a second because it was kind of a progression that we're just going to throw the live recording on and see how it sounds because I think it was a little bit unique, something we don't do every week. But we are brought to you by MyBookie this week. We're going to get to more of that later in the show. But this was kind of a natural progression of our off microphone comments and arguments just kind of grew into doing the show. So we're just going to start with that. There's three of us on this show, you know.
Yeah, but let's be real. The only one anyone really cares about is me and my ego. So,
right. Hey, check that red button.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I saw it. I was like, hey, I see he's trying to ambush me. I'm going to give the people what they want. I'm going to give them that hot take sound bite. This time we're having podcast hot takes. So that's fun. Yes. Well, I'm just happy to be talking to someone. I've gotten kind of tired of just talking to myself. I sit there and I say something, and then I wait for someone to disagree, and then I'm sad and lonely.
As long as you don't answer yourself, you'll be okay.
I think we're reaching that territory. Like, we're reaching a real Smeagol Gollum thing there. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm slowly slipping into the abyss, so that's nice.
Well, folks, it's Thursday, so we have Seth back.
Yay!
You know where to find him on Arrowhead Pride. Check out the rest of the podcast network. We have tons of shows. We had a good one yesterday about the Broncos, and we're going to take, you know, our normal Thursday thing and talk about what happened last time and look a little bit forward to what's coming on Monday night. But we're excited to tell you about the Fan Rag deal. We have our new partnership. LockedOnChiefs.com is the new website. It's going to have all of our stuff. You'll always find the pod. Anything we do beyond that will be there as well, so make sure you check that out. Get subscription through iTunes. It's the easiest way. We also have the feed that you can get on Android, and it'll work with any of those Android apps that are a little bit funky. I use one of them myself, so don't be bashful about that. But Seth's here. So, Chris, where should we start?
I really don't want to start with the Oakland game, but I guess we don't really have much of a choice now, do we?
Gotta look back before you can look forward.
Yeah, I really hate looking back at a game that I think the Chiefs gave away in a lot of ways.
They did.
And like I said on yesterday's show, I don't think the refs helped them, but, you know.
None of us are going to argue that.
Yeah. Oh, man, the more you review, you know, the very last third down play, Tyreek Hill got held, like, all the way down the field. It actually got funny eventually, because like that illegal contact call on Murray was maybe the worst call I've ever seen in my life, and that's saying something.
It was only 4 yards deep.
Worse than the call that they called on Marcus Peters for hitting Derek Carr.
Oh, worse than that. Because with Peters, you know, look, I actually was kind of chuckling on that play before Peters decided to fire off for some reason, because Alan Bailey, me and my brother-in-law were making a joke, because, you know, Alan Bailey just kind of grabbed Carr by the shirt.
Yeah.
And he was like, you could see they had a moment there where Bailey, like, kind of was, like, gently putting him on the ground. It was kind of like, okay, come on, man. You know, do we really have to
get
do
hurt?
This?
Don't fight it.
Yeah. That, and it was exactly that. We were laughing, and then Peters decided to come in like a missile, which, I, you know, really, he was a runner. And Peters had the right to do it. But you got to understand that it's a quarterback, and he's done. He is not getting free from Allen. And he wasn't even really fighting it, right? Carr was in the middle of a business decision. He got grabbed. He looked up. He saw Allen Bailey and did what all of us would do. Like, okay, that's fair.
You know what, though? I do have to say, I thought at the time, too, that he was not down. But John Sleaser from the Star had a really nice stop action shot that shows Peters had not contacted him yet, and his knee is down. So, I mean, live it was impossible to tell that, but in reality, yes.
Yeah, but he might have been down when Peters hit him, but when Peters started going in for the contact, he wasn't down. He wasn't even headed to a knee at that point.
Right. No, and I hear you on that. I just think, you know, it's a quarterback. You got to think it through. Peters is in the midst of his worst season. And he's good in coverage still. He's doing fine. But he has made more bad plays this year than he has since his rookie year. Because he had that awful pass interference down the field, too. And that was just I feel like he's pressing. Like, he's really trying to make big plays.
Yep.
And when you start pressing, you do things like, you know, you hit a guy unnecessarily. And I just...
Or you overcompensate on some route and get beat the other way.
Yep, and he didn't need to hit him. And so that's why, like, to me, I wasn't completely stunned when they threw the flag, right? I was like, oh, come on. But, you know, I kind of... As soon as he hit him, I was like, ugh, and then they threw the flag. The Murray penalty... He wasn't beyond 3 yards. When the ref threw the flag, Murray was no longer touching him. Then the ref reached and pulled the flag. You know when the ref pulled the flag? When Derek Carr fumbled. That's when he threw the flag.
Mm.
Yeah. And which, you know, whatever. Whatever. You know, don't chalk up to conspiracy what can be explained away by incompetence. But that was the worst call I've ever seen in my life. I actually put it up on my Twitter feed just to drive people crazy. Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to remember that one.
Oh, it's a stolen quote. None of my good stuff is original. That's
okay,
you know.
Fair enough.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Was it offensive pass interference on Amari Cooper?
On the first touchdown?
Yep.
You know, the more I watched that one, the more it looked like some legs tangling up, even slowed down. I think Cooper definitely helped him to the ground as he was losing his balance. But I think the last touchdown was a worse pass interference than one. Crabtree just blatantly pushed off. They probably had another, like, when you watch the All-22 throughout the game, they probably had like 10 of those.
Yeah, they were everywhere.
They were just pushing off a ton. I mean, Cook was just basically throwing Murray off of them, which that's why, you know, games like that, you miss Eric Berry, because what Berry would have done eventually is just delivered a shot off of the line of scrimmage or, you know, something similar to that, because Murray kind of took it, you know, and eventually Berry
would have had the size.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that we need to talk about X's and O's wise. But right now, let me take a second and tell you about our sponsor, MyBookie. They're back with us. And ever since we started this podcast, people generally come to us and ask us for advice about the games that week. Usually it's what team to bet on, you know, who you prefer this week versus last, where to risk your money. Well, whether you're betting, where you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting on. So that's why we always tell people to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, and they have a really solid reputation. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payouts in just 2 business days. If you know who's going to win, why not put some money down and win big today? That's why we are asking people to check out MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting. It's the most rewarding player perks in this business. And they have an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go really, really easy. Join now, and MyBookie will even match your deposit up to $1,000, up to 100% bonus. So that's 2-for-1 for your cash. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate this offer and visit MyBookie today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Yeah.
Let's drop the refs. Let's talk about what happened in... There's a lot of theories going out there. I know you've addressed it. There's a couple things that I want to address, too. But,
yeah.
Chris, where do we start with that?
Let's talk about Alex Smith, everybody's favorite topic.
Alex Smith played very well against the Raiders. I haven't done his All-22 review yet. So, you know, I'm always going to be open for, well, maybe he missed a few more plays than I thought. But the eye test and then the plays that I have reviewed so far, which are just here and there as I've looked at some other stuff, he looked real good to me. He was back throwing deep again, which was missing against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about this? He did throw deep against Pittsburgh, especially late, but he was inaccurate. That throw to Tyreek Hill down the field was just awesome. And Hill is, man, he's fast.
Yeah.
And so Alex looked good again. He only had a few missteps throughout the game. Unfortunately, one of them, you know, he kind of ran himself into a sack at the end there. Now, to be fair, the edge rush was rough. But you know, I'm talking about that third down sack where they could have, if they'd gotten a first down, that's a completely different game.
Right.
So what happened was, as far as I can tell, Alex saw that the Raiders were blitzing from the left side, and it was a guy for Kareem Hunt to pick up, and he didn't trust Hunt, and so he drifted right a little bit, right from the snap, Yep, he drifted a little right and a little back instead of staying in his spot. And so the fact that he was off his spot made Schwartz's and Fisher's pass pro look worse than it actually was. Had he stayed in the pocket, those guys go around him.
He did have the defenses work for them.
Yeah. And but, I mean, so that's unfortunate, but I'm not the kind of guy that judges a player just based on one play or, you know, even if it's a final play. Alex, if he wasn't slinging the ball as well as he was, it wouldn't have been a close game.
Well, my favorite point, and looking at the next-gen stats in his passing map, and Chris pointed this out yesterday, that, yeah, one of those is a deflection to Wilson. But of those passes beyond 20 yards, he was 4 for 4. And that's the difference in returning to Smith 2.0 that we didn't see against Pittsburgh.
Right. And I think he leads the league in deep ball yards, if I'm remembering correctly. Definitely QB rating down the field.
You shut your mouth. There's no way Alex Smith leads the league in that.
In deep yards?
I'm being facetious.
Oh, I was like, no, seriously.
Come on, man.
No, I know.
Now, to be fair, I mean, you know, I think he's got something like 500 or so. I mean, to be fair, Mahomes would have like 1,000. But
you just had to go there, didn't you?
Here we go. According to PFF, he does lead the league in deep passing with 717 yards to Tom Brady's number 2 at 585. That's not a small difference.
It's not.
Alex Smith also leads the league in yards per attempt, if I'm correct.
Last time
I looked.
Yep, and completion percentage.
And led the league in TDs until Carson Wentz beat it on Monday Night Football.
Yep, but I know Alex does lead in passer rating. He hasn't thrown a pick. He's got 15 touchdowns and no picks. Alex is having an unbelievable year.
No more turnover talk.
They're going to get like 2 first rounders for him after this year.
You mean that they're going to Chris?
Don't jinx it now.
You mean the fact that they haven't had a turnover since the first play of the season?
Terrible. This is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. No. You know,
folks,
you
send all your complaints to Chris Parker, NFL.
Yeah, when the next game goes horribly askew. No, hey, Alex is playing such great ball. It's so cool to see this happening for him because he puts in the work. He's a good guy by all accounts, and it's awesome to see him playing so well.
Okay, real quick, and I just want to throw this out there. I haven't told Ryan I wanted to ask you this, but I just thought about it.
Oh, no.
So deal with it. Martavis Bryant, do you make that trade?
Nah.
That's kind of where I am too, but I just was curious.
You know, here's the deal with Bryant. I think part of the reason Bryant is having a poor year because Big Ben is quietly cooked. Like, I don't think Ben is half the QB he used to be. And Antonio Brown still looks good because he's by far, maybe not by far, but he's the best receiver in the league. Big Ben, I think he's done. And that's why I think Bryant's having a tough time because number 2 wide receivers have a tough time with crummy quarterbacks. And Big Ben has been mostly crummy. The problem
is... Unless he plays Kansas City.
He wasn't even good against Kansas City. He was bad.
Oh, I know.
So I guess my thing with Bryant is a couple things. One, I really liked what I saw out of DeMarcus Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
He can get open. He's got some deep ball speed. He can adjust well. He can track the ball in the air, and he's really quick in and out of his breaks. And so I think the Chiefs will do all right with him, especially the more familiar he gets. Alex seems to trust him already. He played pretty well against the Raiders. He had one rough drop. You know, I think it was in the third quarter. But, I mean, besides that, I mean, he played real well. So I'm excited for him. And here's the other thing with Bryant. He seems like kind of a head case. And I'll be honest, I think the Chiefs right now are at their limit of guys who are emotional.
Yep.
I think they're at their limit. If Barry were still around, maybe they could afford one more. But right now, I just don't think it's a good idea. I think they got enough combustible personalities out there. And, you know, maybe just sit on that for a bit. So that's my opinion on him, at least.
Well, and I would also say that I think that they don't have a explosively charismatic leader on offense. I think Alex is a leader, but I don't think he's as in your face as some of the other players that the Chiefs have that are leaders on this team.
Right. And, you know, I will say the better Alex plays, the more oomph he has, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how this works.
Well, and
I mean, let's face
players,
it.
The way they respond to him when he does get emotional, it's pretty substantial. And so you
yeah,
can tell that
they get
it.
When Alex gets fired up, everyone gets fired up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty consistent thing. And so I think Alex does have the leadership potential, but he is generally speaking a bit more of a quiet type guy. Sorry, I just had a remember that guy who was doing the newscast thing and his daughter walked in.
Uh-huh.
My one-year-old just showed he knows how to open a door.
Well,
he was
done.
In the doorway, so it just completely threw me off. And then my 11-year-old ran over, sorry, and grabbed him. So yeah. Anyway,
well, at least your 11-year-old knows.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, he gets it. He knows what's important.
That's so.
The offense obviously is a big story. It was nice seeing them bounce back. I think this Denver game is going to be huge for them because I want to see them play well against another good defense. They played pretty well against the Eagles, and look, that win against the Eagles looking more and more impressive, huh?
Right. The only team that wins.
Yeah. And I've had people now tell me, well, I don't think the Eagles were playing as well then. It's like, oh, for the love of, come on. You know, I mean, and so, I mean, that game, and the Redskins look pretty good, too. I mean, the game against the Chargers, the Chiefs have played a brutal schedule, guys. Absolute brutal.
Well, I said that, maybe it wasn't with you on the show, but I did say that according to, maybe it's Football Outsiders or somebody that was looking at strength of schedule. Kansas City had the toughest schedule the first 5 weeks or tough
the first six weeks. The first 6 weeks, I actually looked at that, and when you look at strength of schedule and win-loss record, if you disinclude the teams that they played, right, because
right.
that naturally punishes good teams, the Chiefs had literally the toughest strength of schedule in the NFL. And that went down, I think, a little bit after the Raiders game, but... They still, it's one, and the fact that they're 5-2 after that, I mean, they've played multiple teams that are incredibly talented and are legit playoff and even Super Bowl contenders. So, I mean, the offense, I'm excited to see them play against Denver. I'm really hoping, I haven't heard anything about LDT or Morse. They really need those guys back.
Yeah, I have to agree. I looked at some of the film on Irving, and I think he's starting to get it against the run a little bit. But his pass block is still kind of just out in left field.
Yeah, I'm getting scared about Veach because neither Ragland or Irving are really lighting the world on fire. And I know that's not fair because it's been like, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. But it's still, you're like, oh, no, this is a disaster. But, you know, the big story, talking about Ragland, the defense has actually been more my focus on film this week.
No.
Because, yeah, well, anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that.
Because they forgot to get off the bus?
Well, man, what a just gross game. But, you know, during the game, you know, so many people have been so mad at Bob Sutton, including me, right? Like, during the game, I was like, oh, this guy, there's Houston in coverage again. Blah, rabble, rabble, rabble. And I don't know. I had to start looking at things to try to figure out what's going wrong. So that's kind of what I've been focused on this week.
Well, and I've been doing the same thing, so I am eager to compare notes because I think we probably have a couple of different takes. First off,
sweet.
I went down, and I teased this yesterday, but I went and I checked every one of the top 20 pressure producers, according to PFF. Defensive pressures from the outside rush, and Justin Houston is obviously one of them. But amongst that group, he is by far, I mean like a good 7%, the edge rusher that drops into coverage the most at 75 yep. plus percent. And
right. Now and by that you mean he rushes 75% of the time and drops into coverage 25% of the time.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
But the, you know, okay. You look at Khalil Mack and he's at 95%. You look at Von Miller and he's at 96% and you know, yep. Justin Houston's at 75, yet he's still in the conversation for producing as much pressure as these other guys. So
yep.
My thing is, if you were not dropping him as much, he would be more productive.
Yep. I think that's absolutely true. You know, Houston is a unique player, and I actually, watching the Oakland game, which, let me be clear, he wasn't great in the Oakland game, but he did some things well. He did a lot of things well, actually. And I just gained a whole new respect for Houston's discipline an understanding of what's going on the field. Because there were a few plays where he was starting to rush, but he recognized that an instant throw was coming, and so he dropped back to try to get into the throwing lane and jumped. You know, the kind of stuff that you see usually from, like, interior linemen and stuff. And what happened with Houston, from what I saw, Carr was – and, Ryan, you said you watched a lot of the defensive snaps, like, the passing game. Carr was getting rid of the ball quick throughout the game. And so what I actually did, and I think you said that you maybe saw this on Twitter, I've got, like, three or four GIFs on Twitter of Justin Houston just pulverizing the right tackle. But by the time he gets there, because the throw gets out from about 1.5 seconds to 1.75 seconds, there's very, very few pass rushers from the edge that ever get there inside of 2 seconds. Unless you're talking the occasional freak play like Von Miller in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, when I watched his pass sets, like I watched the right tackle, I think it was Alexander, you know, with a much more 45 set, where he was squared up around the edge. I saw a lot of bull rushes in that game. I didn't see a whole lot of dip and edge. And I think that was by design on their part, and it was fairly effective.
Yeah, he did a bunch of bull rushes and you know, that inside long arm move.
Mm-hmm.
He even does the outside long arm move. Him and Khalil Mack love that move. And I think that's because they're both so much stronger than most edge rushers. Really, and I just, as an aside, Khalil Mack really is a stud. I mean, man, he's good. I mean, ugh, makes me sick that he's a Raider. But anyway, there were very few times that he was trying to bend around the edge. And like you said, it almost looked by design. I think, and I could be wrong here, but I don't know how many of the play action snaps you watched. It almost seemed like he was bull rushing by design. And I could be wrong here, right? It seemed like he was bull rushing by design, so he was prepared to go into a run fit.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a run play, because that was one reason why Carr had all day on a few throws, is the Chiefs clearly were out to stop the run.
Yeah. Embarrassed the week before, and they overcompensated against a team that had run that well.
Right, and they did well against the run. I mean, that was actually encouraging for me, but, you know, it's kind of a matter of finding the balance. So you looked at that. Ryan, what else were you looking for? I was looking for whether the issues were more schematic.
And that's my problem with Bob. And I know from what I saw of your opinion on Twitter, but let me just say, I think my favorite play of the game is when Justin Houston just decided to lean into the interior line and basically knocked a pulling guard on his and just demolished the running back. I think I really enjoyed that, and I think I have to go back and edit that comment out.
Yeah. No, hey, it was great. He just popped the guy. He's so strong. He is just freakishly strong. And that was such a great run stop. I think you and me have disagreed about Sutton in the past. So what I did is I went back and I looked at, you know, a lot of the Raiders' big plays, trying to figure out whether the errors were schematic or execution. A lot of the Raiders' big plays were in the first half. Because the Chiefs' defense actually quietly did a pretty good job in the second quarter and the third quarter. It was the fourth quarter where things fell apart.
So that last drive, I'm with you.
Yeah, that last drive especially, you know, that, you know, added an extra, you know, 80 yards to Carr's stats. And, you know, they gave up some big plays in the first half too. But, I mean, here's the deal. The failures that I saw, and maybe you'll disagree with me, Ryan, were executional in nature, by and large. You know, a guy losing immediately in coverage, right? You know, one-on-one in man coverage. Or, you know, Eric Murray had a rough game.
See, and this is my thing, and people are going to tell you that I'm going to complain about a guy that I like and I follow, and maybe that's part of it, but this is my thing, and I agree with you. Execution was poor across the board for this defense. My problem is that they are in position for that because Bob Sutton misused a bunch of guys. There's no reason, and here, we'll just get into it, and you just shoot me down when you think I'm crazy. If I see Ron Parker play up at the line of scrimmage again, I'm going to throw a fit. They had, you know, especially when they went to that cover one robber stuff, they kept having him back there, and it was driving me insane. Dan Sorensen cannot play deep safety. That's all there is to it. That is Ron Parker's job. If you had left Parker in the back and you had let Murray go over to more of that robber position where he's got the space to use his eyes and use his speed to do that, and you let Dan Sorensen, who is the strongest of the three of them, take on Cook, I think that safety set is much better down the middle and against Cook in particular.
I agree with that. I think there are a few things that Sutton does deserve to be lambasted for. He does drop Houston into coverage too much. Now, to be fair, it's not nearly as much as people think.
Right.
And it really didn't, for the record, it didn't really affect the game. The Raiders didn't have any big plays when Houston was in coverage. Right? It didn't really affect the game in a negative aspect. In fact, like, I think of the 11 snaps, like, there were, like, 5 incomplete passes. There wasn't a single play over 15 yards, and there were only 2 above 10. So, I mean, but he deserves legit criticism for that. And you hit the nail on the head for another legitimate criticism that he deserves, is treating his safeties like they're interchangeable. Here's the problem. That worked. You remember 2014, you know, Barry obviously was diagnosed with cancer, and he went out. And the defense didn't really miss a beat after a game or two. You remember that? Well, here's the safety group that he had then. He had Ron Parker, right? He had Hussein Abdullah, and he had Tyvon Branch. Those guys, while they do have different skill sets, are somewhat interchangeable.
They're a lot more similar than these three are.
Right, whereas these three are not. They are not interchangeable. Ron Parker, honestly, I don't like that Sutton moves around Ron Parker as much as he does. Now, I know quarterbacks read safeties first, and there's a lot of value in versatility. I get that. But Ron Parker, he's gotten a lot better at man coverage, so he can do that. But he's got good range as a free safety, and he can do that. He's not great close to the line. Danny Sorensen, it's interesting. I think Danny Sorensen's fine in that robber role. And I think in certain sets, he can do well as a deep safety. Not single high.
Never.
And even cover two, yeah, you're asking for trouble. But he can do it to an extent, but not really well. But I think more of a robber, or if you want to do that hybrid linebacker, even though he's not nearly as good at it as Barry, he can at least do it, right? Because he's got some size. Eric Murray, he's got some speed. And, you know, look, Murray's played well until this game. And he's played well. He played well in coverage against Reed with Washington. Mm-hmm. I just think this was a bad matchup for him, that physicality.
Yeah, the power that you can bring to Reed.
And he was allowed to get away with some stuff. But the fact that they're treated like they're interchangeable is something that Sutton should really look at. Because that is a problem. So I'll grant you those two things. Yes, Sutton should adjust to that. I agree. I will say, though, some of Eric Murray's errors, though, weren't because of misuse. They were just bad plays. That second Amari Cooper touchdown, that was just him not making a no offense to him, but, I mean, we're talking a high school freshman read.
Well, yeah, and he cut so shallow in his pursuit that he had no chance to catch a guy like that.
Well, yeah, and it went from you know, okay, oh man, bad play, 25 yards, to oh crap, you know, 48 yard touchdown or however long it was, and it went from a bad play to a horribly bad play, and so plays like that, you know, that's not on Sutton. He's not asking him to do anything that Murray shouldn't know how to do.
True.
And I just saw too many of those. You know, there was a big 24 yard gain to Cook where everyone just bit on the play action, and Parker, who was in man coverage against Cook, just let him run free to the right.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a coach's mistake.
No, and that wasn't the only one. I mean, Ron didn't play well either, again, because I think he was out of position. But you're right. There wasn't anybody in the secondary that I thought played well.
No, I don't think so. The secondary really had the worst game I've seen them play in a while. Here's my thing. I'm not really ready to, you know, a lot of people are freaking out about the secondary. Despite everything, they've played pretty decently this year. And they've been playing well for a few years now. And so I'm not quite ready to be like, oh yeah, it's all over. You know? I mean, the injuries have taken their toll, obviously. But I think you've still got some guys who can play there. And I think you've got some guys who can coach there. I mean, the only other quarterback to really play well against the Chiefs was what? Wentz? And he didn't even play that well, right? He just had a ton of throws, and he made some great plays, but he also made some bad plays.
True. I think Cousins had a pretty good game as well, though.
He had the one big gain to Vernon Davis, I think. And then he had some good runs. But, I mean, overall, they've contained some good quarterbacks.
But his play to Vernon Davis was more Vernon Davis than it was really Cousins.
Right. That was just a bad matchup situation. You know, Justin Houston can't run 40 yards down the field with Vernon Davis because Vernon Davis is still very, very fast. Not that Houston isn't, but he's not Vernon Davis fast. But no, I would just say, you know, just real quick, you know, because I know we don't have all the time in the world, but what I've noticed, you know how many times the Chiefs dropped 8 in coverage and rushed 3 guys total?
I don't. I would have guessed it's around 8 or 10, but...
It was 6. And so, I was surprised by that, right? Because you know what happens when you're looking for something that bothers you? You notice it every time right. it happens. Oh, there they are, rushing 3 again. You know, Sutton, you know, I've had a lot of people, oh, they're using the same thing they did against the Patriots. They're really not. I just wanted to say, I mean, that's one myth that's just not true. It's also not true that the pass rush is getting completely blown out of the water. The Raiders were throwing the ball really quickly for the vast majority of the game.
Which is generally blown coverage.
Yes. The coverage, the secondary, like Ryan said, the secondary played poorly. And like all those gifts that I showed, Justin, if you have coverage that lasts for a full 2 seconds and forces him to go to his second read, like really legitimately second read or third read, that those are sacks. Mm-hmm. Except they couldn't do it. And so I'm not, you know, it's just interesting to me the things people are blaming. Because it seems to me like people just want to like blow up everything and just like, oh, everything's a problem. You know, I've had multiple people tweet me that Justin Houston is bad. And I'm just like, that's not what's happening wow. here. And, okay. and you know, I was worried because that's the second game in a row he's been kind of quiet. But, man, I don't know if you watch as much, Ryan, but, man, how often does Justin Houston get chipped?
Yeah, right. I mean, they had a good game plan between getting the ball out and chipping him constantly. I mean, but let me ask you this.
Sorry.
When I look at him, and I theorized about this the other day, and I think Chris thinks I'm crazy, but I'm still not sure in terms of dipping around the edge. I'm not sure Justin Houston's 100%. Or that maybe he hasn't been for the last couple of weeks. Like, I'm starting to think with the volume of bull rushes and the volume of drops, maybe they're trying to disguise something that maybe he's got something that's bothering him.
I could see that. I mean, he had, what was it? It was like a calf issue or a hamstring
right,
issue
yeah.
or something in his leg, some muscle thing. And so, because I agree, because if you watch the first few weeks, like especially against the Patriots, right, he just took over down mm-hmm. the stretch. Against the Chargers, he took over down the stretch. And this is another thing where people are like, eh, he's not making big plays. I'm like, what games were you watching? Like, he terrorized Wentz. I'm not sure if he collected a sack that game. I think he collected one. But he terrorized him down the stretch. Down the stretch, you know, when the game actually counted, he terrorized Watson coming around the edge. And then all of a sudden, for the last few weeks, like you said, it's been mostly bull rushes. And now because he's really good at that, he's still getting pressure. But he doesn't seem like he's dipping around the edge quite as much. And when you lack variety in your pass rush moves, it's pretty tough. You know, everyone needs variety. Even Aaron Donald, even Von Miller. You need variety because NFL tackles are too good to get beat by the same thing over and over again. And so that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, obviously, seriously, this little mini bye week could not have come at a better time. I wish they had a full bye week right now. I really do. But I like the fact that they're getting this miniature bye week, that they've got a little time to get healthy. But it is just, in the meantime, people are just jumping ship on the defense. And, I mean, we'll see what happens. And that's why this is a big game for the defense against the Broncos, too. Because the Broncos have a bad offense.
Wait a second. This isn't a bye week against the Broncos?
Oh, man. Be careful. You know, people are talking like that about
the Raiders.
You're
pushing your karma here, dude.
And so,
hey, you know, I'm just trying to get my 2 cents in because I've not had a chance very much. You guys have been going back and forth, which is fine. What I will say, and I will change the subject just a little bit on you both, you know, it looks like they could get possibly Steven Nelson back this week, which is a good sign for Kansas City. But there's another guy out there that, you know, I've been asked about, what about going out and getting Byron Maxwell?
I don't think he's really done anything in a while, has he?
In a press scheme? I don't know. I mean, I guess, okay, I just lied.
I'm just throwing it out there.
They're not in a press scheme. They're a man scheme. They don't play press anymore.
Right, that's true. But they are still a man scheme, and that's not something that he's ever been great in.
Right.
It's kind of the same theory for me. It sounds like there were some issues there. For me, it's not worth it. I understand because the secondary could use some help. But I think you get Steven Nelson back. And yeah, now, to be fair, I'm a little worried people are starting to view Steven Nelson as some kind of, like, savior. And I just want to be clear, you know, this isn't – you're not getting back Eric Berry here.
No. Although I will argue with you that I think he's probably the second best corner on this team. And Seth goes silent.
Well, no, Mitchell's had his ups and downs this year. So, I mean, it is what it is. You know, he's given up a lot of yards. To be fair, he's getting targeted a ton. And he's also made a lot of good plays, too. I'm not sure how well Mitchell would acquit himself in the situation that – or how well Nelson would acquit himself in the situation that Mitchell has been. We might find out. I'm curious whether they move him back to the number two corner spot or whether they just stick with him in the slot exclusively. It'll be interesting, but I do think they desperately need him to come back because Gaines, as much as he's shown potential in the past, he just isn't getting it done, and he's getting picked on. So,
and whether he starts or not, I think Nelson makes Mitchell better.
I think so. Absolutely. There's a ripple effect in the secondary. So it'll be good to get him back. If he can, sooner rather than later. I'm waiting to hear news about Tamba because I do think the team could use his fire. I think the defense could use a little lift there. But I'm curious if he plays this year.
Chris, what do you think?
I think Tamba will play. I don't know when it's going to be. They have a decision to make in the next couple of weeks with him. They've got to activate him, I think, by week 9 at least to practice, and they haven't done that yet. So, and I think they could have done that after week 6. So they've got a decision to make with him. I've said this before. I still think it's going to be a stretch for Steven Nelson to play this week. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't play this week, that's okay with me because, just going to be honest, I don't think that the Broncos have a weapon that really scares me when it comes to the passing game. And I know, yes, they have Demaryius Thomas, but they're not going to have Emmanuel Sanders, more than likely.
And Sanders is the one that has mostly killed the Chiefs.
Right.
Thomas is a really I'm going to flip that the other way. Marcus Peters is a really bad matchup for Thomas. Because what Thomas does well, right, is he overpowers guys and he wins at the catch point. He doesn't get separation very well. And Peters eats those guys alive. There's a reason Crabtree didn't do much against Peters. And, those two don't like each other. But he did more when he went to the other side. He's real good against that kind of thing. I really hope to see the secondary bounce back. I don't think it's the end of the world. I think you saw some execution failures that were very uncharacteristic of a Bob Sutton coach team.
Well, and I'll tell you the two that I would watch for because I think Benny Fowler has had an uncanny opportunistic streak against the Chiefs, and I think Green is somebody. Those two guys from the slot in the tight end position running down the middle, attacking those safeties, I think that's something that the Bronco team has to look at.
Right.
No, wait a second. You guys aren't going to talk about Jamal Charles?
I'm getting to it. Well, here's the thing. I like what you said, Chris, because they need some help on the edge, because if I'm Jamal Charles, I know D Ford's out there, and I'm telling him we have to run on him every other play.
Right. This is like one plus, I mean, this has to be like the game that Charles is like, guys, just give me the ball 20 times.
Yeah, right.
And I will run for 250 yards. Just do it. Now, the thing is, the Chiefs have shown when they load up against the run that they can stop the run.
And yeah, but the Raiders don't have a guy like Charles on their roster.
Well, you know, dude, I don't know if the Broncos have a guy really like Charles on their roster.
That's fair.
And now, to be fair, I've talked to you guys and I've watched him a little. He looks like he's got some of that burst still. The question that they've got to ask themselves, though, is this their midseason Super Bowl? I'd argue even with the Chiefs losing last week because Denver lost too, this is kind of a must win for them as much as it gets in midseason. Because if they lose, because they're 3-3, if they lose, they're 3-4, and the Chiefs are 6-2. That's a tall hill to climb.
Mm-hmm.
Which really sucks for Kansas City because they're playing a team for the third straight week that is desperate.
Yeah, right. Backs to the wall. They keep playing these teams with their backs to the wall for sure. Man, I wish they would have won Thursday. They could have just had a chance to just bury the whole AFC West.
They can still bury the whole AFC West if they win on Monday night.
That's true.
Yeah, not near Although as much.
I wouldn't sleep on the Chargers making some noise later on in the season, but I don't really fear them. I think the Chiefs match up well against them. Charles, that'll be interesting. I actually said at the end of my podcast, I had a whole little like 1-minute segment where I just said, look, if you're there at Arrowhead, on Sunday or on Monday, please don't boo Jamal Charles.
Yeah.
I get he made people mad with the comments he made. What was he going to do? They just signed him. And, hey, he did cheer for the Broncos as a kid. What are we, you know, are we seriously going to get mad at someone for who he cheered for as a kid? And I just, he did so many great things as a Chief. And it would just break my heart to see him get booed. Even if people are like, oh, I'll cheer him when he's put in the Ring of Honor, which he will be, right? I mean, there's no doubt that he's a Ring of Honor guy. None. He could play for the Broncos for another 4 years, and he's a Ring of Honor guy.
Is he a Hall of Fame guy?
That's why, you know, him playing, it bothers me. But if he can, you know, accrue, you know, some meaningless, you know, 600, 700-yard seasons while maintaining that yards per carry average, you know, total yards matter. Where you rank in the all-time rushing, it matters. And that'll help him pass a few people.
But it's the yards per carry thing that he's got to keep up.
Exactly. If he becomes even second or third all time, I think his chances are almost minuscule. But can you deny the guy who is the most efficient runner to ever walk on a field? Can you deny that guy the Hall of Fame? I don't think you can.
I agree.
Especially if he gets his base stuff up just enough. Is that I really wish, and I mean this, I really wish they had had some kind of crystal ball to know that Charles would get healthy again and be healthy enough to be like what Charkhandrick West is right now.
Yeah.
Maybe,
but they still couldn't afford him. I don't think he was going to reduce his salary that much. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think he would have, honestly. Would he have accepted though such a limited role? And then
It would have had to have been the third back, because at that point you're not thinking that Spencer Ware is going to be out for the season,
right? And I think they knew what they had in Kareem Hunt. Maybe they didn't know he'd be this good, but I think they knew they had a really good back there, or they knew they were going to go after him. But you know, just the whole thing, it does stink, though, because exactly what the Chiefs need. And West has done a good job as the third down back. But, you know, Charles is good in pass pro. He's dangerous as a passing option. And he can run the ball. It would have been nice to see him around in that role. But what are you going to do? So, I mean, as far as Charles goes, I hope people cheer him, because he brought a lot of good memories to Arrowhead.
Well, and the last thing that we should consider is, shockingly, you think about the Broncos defense and you think about how they can pass rush and how they can defend the pass well. They're also giving up the fewest yards per carry in the league this season. So
they picked up some good interior run defenders, which is what they needed.
Yeah, and with the way that Kareem Hunt's been used, man, I don't know that you're going to be able to make a whole lot of yardage inside. So let's see what they do with him in the pass game is what I'm thinking.
Yep, I agree. Try to get their linebackers one-on-one against him in space. I don't think they've got the horses for that. Horses. Anyway, I actually didn't mean to do that.
Sure you did.
But no, this nice I'm excited to see. This is an important game for the offense to show they can play well against another good defense, because come playoff time, that's going to matter. Denver, I don't think, will try to imitate Pittsburgh the way the Raiders did, because Denver's got their own scheme, and I think they believe in it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Steelers, they were desperate. Or the Raiders, they were desperate, right? And so they just tried to do what the Steelers did, and they just weren't able to do it because Alex started throwing flames. So it'll be an interesting game, and it's a chance for the defense to prove, okay, we are still a good unit. We can shut down a bad offense. Because, look, that's the first step, right?
It is.
Get back on track. You know, if they give up, you know, 24, 30 points to this Denver team, and to be fair, look, Denver scored 42 against Dallas. The NFL's weird, man. But the defense needs to show that it can at least be an average group. There's so much talent there.
This defense, or this offense that they're going to be facing, doesn't have any of the talent that the Oakland or Pittsburgh defense, or the Oakland or Pittsburgh offenses have.
Absolutely. And so there's really very few excuses for getting carved up. Even a little.
Well, yeah, they should be able to come in there and dominate. If they're anything that their talent says they are, they should be able to dominate this offense.
Yep, and so then the key is making sure you score a few times. This is your chance to bury Denver, and I hope they do.
Well, let's get down to it. What's your prediction for this game?
Oh, man, I just am tired of doing predictions. The last couple of weeks, I've been so wrong.
No, that's why I love making you do them.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs win. I think it's going to be a bit of a struggle. I think about 2010.
Okay. I like that. Folks, we will have our predictions tomorrow, but Seth, thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
And guys, you know where to find him over on Arrowhead Pride. Check out all of his stuff. He's going to go into the Sutton thing. I'm sure he's going to have a whole lot of more detail on the defense that I know you guys are dying to argue about, so go check him out. We will be back tomorrow with our preview show. We'll have our predictions, maybe a couple of other little tidbits. So thank you for listening to today, and we'll talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL and at Chris Clark NFL. We'll talk to you next time.